Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Well, hi everybody, and welcome to another my favourite Ipswich Town 11. My name's Mike Bacon, and this little series we've been putting together has been so popular. It's been wonderful, but we had a little break over the last month or so. We've all been sunbathing or going off on holiday or even obviously catching up pre-season, and we're starting to watch the Town play again. And well, it's just been. Well, we're back anyway. That's the main thing. I know many of you have enjoyed these series, and people speak from the strangest of places about this series. I was actually in the car wash, would you believe, the other week, and before I was about to pay, I was going to have a $3.99, ended up having a $5.99 because the chap was so convinced I should, you know, talk to him about the favourite Ipswich Town 11. I can't remember who it was. He was saying missed out Johnny Walk. Anyway, I digress. Okay, so this anyway, we're back. Favourite Ipswich Town 11 and my guest today. Well, what can I say about him? Well, I could say a lot of things about him, but he won't be happy if I did, so I'll just keep it brief. No, he's a top man, top Ipswich Town fan, been for many years, and he between you and me, he hasn't got his hat on, if you'll listen to this on audio, which is a good thing for me, because he comes with a huge, great hat he comes to at football sometimes. We have to sit in behind us. He's staying in Daily Times, boys. We have to sit in behind us so he doesn't block our view if he sat in front of us. And look, he's been the guru of TWTD.co.uk for, seems like centuries now. He must have started up when he was like 4 and a half. But anyway, he's here with us. He's the editor of that wonderful Ipswich Town website, Mr. Phil Ham. Phil, well, how great to see you. How are you?
What a terrific introduction. I don't think I've ever had a lengthier or more comprehensive introduction in my lengthy career. Yeah, and as you say, I was a small boy when we started when I first got involved in TWTD.
You must have been a small boy because it seems to have been going forever, and you only look about, I don't know, 36. So I mean, how old were you when you did start it up?
I think I was 24, which was sort of the end of 1994, because the fanzine, as it was, had already existed under two editorships before us, and the editors at the time, Gavin Barber and Phil Arnold, they decided that they, for whatever reason, they wanted to give it up, and me and Steve Mellon, who was a colleague of yours at one time, I think Steve was actually offered it, and he one night in the pub, and we're both in a similar situation. We'd just finished university and was sort of looking to do something, and had really kind of a bit directionless, and thought it was really something we could do to, you know, put a portfolio together, that kind of thing. And anyway, gradually, and we started doing it as a fanzine, and then the internet sort of happened, and I was involved at the time at Leicester University and on a course where I learned about the internet, and it seemed a natural fit. And then Gavin Wilding came in, who's a programmer, and we put a website together, and gradually over that sort of period in the late 90s, sort of the website kind of built up, and then we kind of went professional, as it were, full time, sort of about 2000, 2001-ish, and it's been a job ever since. So yeah, and I'm considerably older than 36, as you suggested. I do take the compliment.
Well, look, we look fairly similar age wise. So I'm only 39. So I must think to myself, well, you're a little bit younger than me. But anyway, well, that's fantastic. But TWTD has been going for a while now, and obviously a lot of town fans enjoy it, and the forum particularly is very very busy.
It's kind of gratifying, obviously, that so many people do visit it every day, and the news and the forum and all the other kind of aspects of the site that are there. And as you say, there are people on the forum that have been using the forum since the mid to late 90s, you know, which is fantastic. People have kind of known each other, and we've had couples meet on the forum, and children born as a result of them meeting on the forum, and friendships formed, and all these. It was never kind of put together with those kind of intentions, but the community side of it has been fantastic. I mean, you know, people doing things with charity we did a collection for kit for someone in the US Army a few years ago to take out to Iraq. So we sort of a collaboration with the US Army, which was extraordinary. And when we did a collection for tickets for Ukrainian refugees a month or so ago, so that they can kind of watch the town and settle into life over here. So yeah, we couldn't possibly have imagined that it would kind of, but I mean, never had any intention of it being a job when I got involved in it to start with. And certainly not a job that would kind of cover my 30s, 40s and early 50s now.
Well, there you are. You're still going, young Phil, not looking like, say, a day over 36, so which is fantastic. And hey, look, I mean, you must go back to Ipswich Town let's just, before we talk about, because you're here talking about favourite Ipswich Town 11, which of course is going to be very interesting, and we're looking forward to hearing what that is, Phil. And I just had to remind you that you needed some substitutes before we started this podcast, of course, which you had forgotten. You never knew in the first place. But anyway, you now have them. But so, right, first game then, Phil. When were you first at Portman Road, or roughly what era?
Well, the first games I was at Portman Road were reserve games. Because obviously reserve games were on a Saturday afternoon, weren't they? When the first team were away, the reserves played at Portman Road, and a lot of people used to turn up, because I think it was one of the few ways at that time in the mid 70s you could actually find out the score of the first team game, wasn't it? Over the PA. But I think because football in the mid 70s wasn't the most child friendly of atmospheres at times, and I think my dad kind of thought that. We'll give it a bit of a taster at a very young age of going to these reserve games. I can remember going to a game against Swindon, which must have been sort of 76, 77, something like that, and running up and down the terraces, the North Stand terraces. But the first proper game, and actually the first, probably before I went to a proper game, I'd actually been on a tour of the ground with the Cubs at Kesgrave. And which Mel Henderson thinks that he probably led.
He was there then, wasn't he?
Part of his job at the time. Anyway, afterwards, the Cub leader said, we all have to write an account of it all. And so we all wrote an account of it. And the winner would be published in the parish magazine. And I was completely shocked when I actually won. And so my first Ipswich Town article was published in the Kesgrave Parish magazine in about 1977. And you know what they say, the sort of old saying is that give me the boy at seven and I'll show you the man. Very obviously the case there. But the first game I went to was against Southampton in November 79. My friend Phil Murray, it was his birthday treat, and his dad took us to Portman Road, standing on the milk crates in the traditional manner at the back of Churchman's.
Yes. Yeah.
And that team, I mean, that day, and I've watched the game back sort of relatively recently, actually, and I think Terry Butcher was at left back, the Beat was at centre-half, and the goal scorers were Walkie, Gates and Brazil. So, and Mariner missed a penalty at the end. And Mitch Devray came on as a sub for his debut. And so I made my debut the same day as Mitch Devray. There you go.
And I'm very glad to hear you mention the milk crates, because the milk crates are something that these young fans feel will have no idea the importance of a milk crate, will they? And taking it to a Portman Road. Yeah. I was an East Stand milk crater, heading towards the North Stand end, up that sort of end. That was my milk crate stand right at the front. Even the Churchman's, that's quite brave to have one in the Churchman's end.
Yeah, I don't know quite where we. Well, I don't know. Yeah, we ended up there, but we tended to sort of then. When I went with my dad and my brother, we went on that East Terrace, as it was known, I think, wasn't it? The Portman Terrace, which was like a family section for a while, wasn't it? So we sat there kind of during with the games we saw during the 80-81 era and all that. But we didn't go all the time. We didn't have a season ticket or anything like that. Money was a bit tight. We just sort of went a few times a season at that point. But while still completely obsessed with Ipswich Town and used to see... most of the games, I'd say, or a lot of the games were either match of the day or match of the week, weren't they, during that era?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's actually quite interesting at the moment, is that if anyone's watched on ITV4, Big Match Revisited and stuff like that, it keeps coming on. And Ipswich Town are on there nearly all the time, because they're doing it from the sort of the late 70s through that early 80s. And of course, that's a great era for us, Phil. Obviously, we enjoyed all that. And I know we bore to death again our younger fans about how great Ipswich Town were. And but it was a surreal time, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but it was I mean, it feels like that now, but at the time it was normality, wasn't it? Growing up, I mean, I was seven when we won the cup in 78. And you took being in cup finals or being challenging for the league or having Barcelona down here in the UEFA Cup or you Cup Winners' Cup as just sort of normality. You expected it every year. And so because we'd never known anything else, people of my age. So I think there was perhaps a bit of a lack of appreciation to some degree of what remarkable times we were living in and going through. And I mean, that's kind of something I do feel that I was probably a bit too young to really appreciate the quality of the football and what was being achieved in that era. It's the fact that kind of our main rivals at that point were really Liverpool, weren't they, rather than Norwich to some degree. And because we were challenging for the title with them most seasons. And as you say, you look back and think, blimey, and I know so many people from fans from around the country who became Ipswich fans because of they saw the quality of football, not just around the country, from abroad, all the Scandinavian fans, people in Ireland and Northern Ireland, and Tom van Hulsen, the Dutch journalist who just sort of fell in love with town's football. And that still kind of has an impact on our support, I think, people that are still following town because of that era.
Well, look, that's absolutely spot on, Phil, and you're absolutely right. It was a great era, and of course, and then George Birdie came through as well. And what we want to do at the end is talk about perhaps Kieran McKenna now, and what, because like me and you have, I'd say old hats, but I've mentioned the word hat again. I've mentioned it once already. I'm not going to say that word, but we do remember those times. Let's see what we think about the future going forward as well, Phil, later on in the pod, because I think both of us have seen enough of Ipswich Town to know what we're looking at now as well. But look, hey, let's get your favourite Ipswich Town 11 then, Phil. So it covers a big era. It covers from the mid-70s right through to 2022. Phil, let's start off. Have you got a little formation? Or I don't really like formations, to be honest, but I know you do, so I'm sure you'll have a formation there, have you, or not? And start with the goal.
Gone for a rather traditional 4-4-2, actually.
Excellent.
Not really. I mean, it's sort of slightly forced to some degree, I suppose. But yeah, it's a fairly classic 4-4-2. I think it could certainly play in that way. Yeah. So it's flat back four. Yeah, midfield. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good. Excellent. Right, 4-4-2. It is. Who's the goalie then, Phil?
Well, I've gone for Richard Wright. Now, I think a lot of people will kind of look at Paul Cooper and say, well, we obviously saw Paul Cooper play for many years, which I did, and he was a great keeper. But I think that for me, that Burley era, which was my late 20s to my early 30s, and the way that team sort of developed over that period is probably the era that when I'm kind of sitting in a care home, boring some nurse about that's probably the era that I'll look back most fondly upon because I was able to appreciate it more perhaps than the Robson era and Richard Wright was such a key man in that, and again he was a local boy and that was given his chance at 17, which is, how rare is that with a goalkeeper to be given a debut at 17 in the Premier League? I know by that time we'd already been relegated. But it was quite a big decision for George Birdie to make at that point because actually I think our senior goalkeepers were both injured, weren't they? The Clive Baker and Craig Forrest, I think, at that time. And the previous week he gave another goalkeeper, Phil Morgan, his debut, who was slightly more senior, I think 21 or something like that, at Stoke, and we lost. And I wonder whether George had been umming and ahhing about which one of the two to start, because I think there was always this expectation that Richard Wright was going to be the next, was one of the real stars coming off the youth system at the time. And anyway, the next week we had a home game against Coventry, and he gave him his debut and we won 2-0 and he kept a clean sheet. And really, I think that was it, wasn't it? I think he was the first team.
The rest was sort of history, really, with Richard, wasn't it? I mean, just, yeah. I mean, but Burnley was good at giving young players a chance, wasn't he? He didn't. Yeah. He was never scared to chuck youngsters in his time at other clubs as well. So, Richard Wright was, a lot of people. A lot of people have chosen Richard Wright. A few people have chosen him, but not as many as I thought would. But so it's interesting, Phil. I back you on that. I think he was a top goalkeeper, and of course, played for England. I mean, you know, have we had? Well, we must have goalies play for England, don't we? Yeah, have we?
No, he's only we've had nothing. Yes, we've not had many international goalkeepers. Have we? Bart played for Poland, and Asmir Begovic played for Bosnia and Herzegovina. Can't think of too many more. Oh, Scotland. What's his name? Played for Scotland. The goalkeeper that was here under Jim, whose name escapes me for a second. It probably comes to me in about an hour's time. And you look back and you think, I can't think of many goals that were Richard Wright's fault during the entire time he was here. And I think he made something like, at one stage, I think he made 200 consecutive appearances. Mm. I mean, how many goalkeepers came to the club to be the number two keeper and never made an appearance?
Yeah.
I mean, it's lots of... Lee Bracey was here for years and never made an appearance. Lee Bracey's only known as being a radio co-commentator here, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I think people like Mike Salmon, I don't think he played very much, did he? And there were quite a few, I think, that were here during his first spell. I don't think his second and third spells kind of matched the first spell. But and that season in the Premier League, the first season in the Premier League, he was absolutely fantastic. I know everyone talks about Marcus Stewart's goals and Jim being the kind of the hub of the team, but Richard Wright in goal was really very, very good. I think that's the game we actually lost at Arsenal, but he made so many saves in that game. It was and superb saves. It was really, really top goalkeeper. And I don't think anyone. I know people say, "Oh, he went to Arsenal for the money." You can't stand
him. No. He had to make a move. Making a move wasn't. Yeah, he'd done well, and the move was. It wasn't a case of money. I don't think he wanted to try and just Arsenal. If Arsenal come calling, a club like Arsenal, it was a big move for him, wasn't it? So, yeah. Wait, look, Richard Wright's in goal then, Phil. I mean, that's good. That's a good start. We'll now go to your back four. Now, do you want to tell us who they are and then reel a little bit off about each one of them, or just want to go straight in the right back and a few words, and then left back and a few words? I'll leave to you.
Well, if I talk about the fullbacks, Mick Mills and Mauricio Tirico. Mm. Now, so they could both play either side, couldn't they? They're both right-footed left backs, really. But both spent time playing at right back. I think Millsy obviously was playing at right back in the UEFA Cup winning year because George got injured, and Steve McCall came in at left back. And Tirico, I think he went to right back when Jamie Clapham came in, if I remember rightly. I could have that slightly wrong, but someone else came in at left back. But I think we kind of remember him at left back with that forging that fantastic partnership with Paul Mason down the left, which was one of the big features of that team in the late 90s. But so yeah, so
I think Tirico, just sorry, but I mean Tirico was possibly, and all the years I've followed Ipswich Town, and just a few years before you actually started watching, so he must go down, I reckon, as one of the biggest fans' favourites ever. Not the biggest ever, but certainly if you took a top five of best, most favourite ever Ipswich Town, not best, favourite, fans' favourites, Tirico's going to be up there, isn't he?
Yes, definitely. I think there's a sort of story there, isn't there? There's a sort of narrative that he comes over from Argentina as a sort of make weight, as it were, in the when Paz came out. He was sort of, very much the secondary figure, wasn't he, in that deal? When the two of them signed, they weren't part of the same deal, were they? They came from different clubs, but I think that he was. And so Paz was seen as the star, and then he made his debut against Bolton in the League Cup, and we lost 3-0, didn't we, to a team two divisions below us, which is always good. With my mate, Bolton fan, sat next to me that day, and then disappeared for a year, and really, it looked like it was a failed signing. Nothing was going to happen. And then at the beginning of the following season, after we'd been relegated, we suddenly had a kind of fullback injury crisis. I think anybody who played fullback got injured. Neil Thompson, Frank Yeller, all those that. I don't think George had that much trust in him at that point. But then he came into the team, and he, like Richard Wright, made himself undroppable, and gradually has emerged as an absolutely key player in that team, and one of the best players in that team, and as you say, a fan's favourite. Knew how to get fans on side. I don't like yellow. I think he said to us in an interview, and he really got it, and I can remember sort of. And he lived on Grange Farm, didn't he? And he'd just go around his house, and he'd end up playing table tennis in his garage with the kids. And people kind of, you know when a player is kind of really dedicated and has real kind of affection for the club. And I think it was genuinely, when he went to Tottenham, a really difficult decision for him. I mean,
was a difficult decision.
Again, like Richard Wright, it was a step up because obviously we're in the what was the first division at that point, and now it's the Championship. But I think he found it quite hard to leave the club and leave the area because he was so well settled. And in fact, actually, I think there were suggestions he was going to come back at one point when we were in the Premier League because he wasn't in the Tottenham team. And I think he was quite keen, and George was quite keen to have him back. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen. But it was. Yeah, he was just terrific as a footballer, and he had that spirit, and was a bit of a master of the dark arts. I think the players nicknamed him Silent Death, didn't they?
And it's strange because I like the way you've. I mean, your other fullback, Mick Mills, couldn't be more opposite, polar opposites, really, could they? I mean, but what a player!
Yes, yeah, I think that's right. Mills, when I was growing up. I don't think I imagined anyone else as Ipswich Town captain other than Mick Mills. He was our leader, wasn't he? And just such a calm and measured, I mean, you talk to him now in the press room, a calm and measured, intelligent sort of presence. And it's interesting because I had a conversation last week with another podcast, sort of not Town fans, and they were saying, but you've got all those big characters in that team. You've got Mariner, you've got Beattie, you know, you've got Hunter and all these people. And yet the captain is this rather more sort of measured, not a shouter.
Do you know who reminds me of? The Mike Brearley of England cricket captaincy.
Yes. No. More like a cricket captain, actually.
Do you know what I mean? Mike Brearley was never the star man in England cricket, but my word, did he have this presence, didn't he, in the England cricket team?
Yeah.
And Mick had that complete with our successful team. All the big characters who played under him, the big noises, but he was the main man. He was the one who kept it all... nice. He was Bobby's big right hand man, wasn't he?
Yes. And I think that's ultimately was perhaps why he ended up leaving, is I think Bobby Ferguson saw him as a bit of a threat, that he was bigger than him. Which I think was a big mistake. I think the appointment of Bobby Ferguson was a big mistake, full stop. But of course, a really good footballer. I think we should sort of...
Exactly. Very good footballer. Yeah. Well, you don't captain England. Don't captain England World Cup. You're not a good footballer. Yeah. So you got Mills and Tirico each side. And who you got? Who are the big men at the back then? Or perhaps not big men, perhaps they're little people. But who are they?
Yes. I've picked... I was trying to think of who the... Yeah, Mickey Stocknow. He did play centre-half once. He told us that on the radio.
He played everywhere, Mickey Stockwell.
John Lyle started a game at Leeds with him at centre-half, but it lasted about 15 minutes. I can't really pick anyone other than Kevin Beattie and Terry Butcher, can I? Having done radio shows with them, the two of them, for many years.
But what a couple of colossus.
The greatest centre-half. The obviously, you've got Russell Osman and Alan Hunter, and I think people older than me would talk about Billy Baxter. In fact, I interviewed Ray Crawford a while ago, and he said Billy Baxter for him is the greatest player to ever play for Town.
I think Tony Garnett told me that once as well. He said, "You never saw Billy Baxter, did you?" I said, No. He said, "He was out. You thought Beattie was good." He said, "Baxter was right up there as well."
Yeah, and that's exactly the conversation I had with Ray. And yes, I think Yeah, they are probably, for anyone who's sort of post 60s, the sort of two outstanding centre halves with and probably at most other clubs, Alan Hunter and Russell Osman would be right up there as well, right up there instead. But as I say, Terry actually, and both of them were defenders, but also footballers. I think that's the other thing, that the fact that Bobby played them both at left back early in their careers. And I think for Beat, it's probably a great shame that he won all his caps for England at left back, didn't he, rather than in his best position. And that he only won 9 caps when he should have equaled, I think, 77 Terry won. I think he probably should have been up there with him. So I don't remember Beat at his best. When I talked to kind of the likes of Dave Allard and people like that, slightly earlier than I was watching, perhaps 74, 75, 76, that kind of period was before the injuries really kicked in, was when Beat was at his best. But I mean, what a player. I mean, you just have to look at the highlights reel and see, you know, the pace, the power, the strength, the leap. I mean, the thing when I first met him that surprised me was that he's not that much taller than me.
No.
He's not that much, I think he's 5'10". And yet he was marking people like, well, what's his name? The big centre forward for Derby in the 70s. Davis, was it? It was about 6 foot.
Kevin Davis.
No, not Kevin Davis. In Derby in the mid-70s, I think it was 6'7", I think. And yet he'd mark him, you know, and he'd kind of deal with him in the air. And
I remember Beat scoring a goal at Everton once in the FA Cup. Well, I was there actually as a fan because I was very, very young. And I think it was just a 2-0 down and Bobby brought him on as a sub because he'd been injured. And a corner came over and Beat literally leapt above everybody. I mean, he literally was ahead above everybody and made it to, you'd never see anyone leap so high. We thought, where the hell did that come from? Where did he come from?
Yeah,
made it 2-1. I mean, Ipswich lost, I think. Well, they did lose, but I won't forget that goal. And Butch, of course, as you say, a footballer. That's what people forget. They just think Butch is a big chap, blah blah blah. But he could play.
He could, and I think people forget that because of all the sort of iconography that surrounds him, the shirt covered in blood, and all that sort of stuff, and Bobby Robson saying, you know, he's the man you'd want next to you in the trenches and that kind of thing. It was all about his spirit and character, which are, you know, undeniable, obviously part of his game, but they're only part of his game. He was a footballer as well. Mm. When you watch the St Etienne, the highlights of the St Etienne away game, when he played left back in that game as well, he's pretty much like a winger in that match, banging crosses in, a 6'4" or whatever to Terry. Yeah. So terrific footballer. And also, again, I mean, I know the sort of I say it sort of detracts from him, but you need those sorts of characters in teams. And alongside your kind of Mick Millses with the kind of more measured sort of cricket captain's type approach. And sort of driving the team on. I remember all the stories about how matches have been won in the tunnel just by him and Mariner kind of being so vocal and so aggressive that other teams are cowering. Terrific defender, terrific footballer, terrific character, terrific bloke, having done the radio show with him and Beat, of course, seven years with Beat and the last 3 years, I suppose, with the hiatus for the pandemic with Terry. So, I think I don't think you could ask for it. And the other thing that's so brilliant about Terry is that Beat was his hero growing up.
Terrific. Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, Tay, we've been blessed with some fantastic centre halves back in the day. You picked two great ones there. Look, I'm Mike Bacon. I hope you're enjoying listening to my favourite Ipswich Town 11. It's with Phil Ham here from twtd.co.uk. I make sure I get that right, he told me right before the start. Otherwise, he'll just storm off set. He said, or if Ipswich Town make a transfer, he's leaving the set. I have to be very careful. Have very careful how I treat him, and obviously this is terrific. We've already so what have we got for your back five then, Phil? Let's just quickly run through them before we get into the midfield.
Well, we've got Richard Wright in goal, and we decided that Mick Mills is going to be right back, didn't we? And Mauricio Jurico left back, and then Kevin Beattie and Terry Butcher the centre halves. Now, I'm not sure which way round they would go. I think there'd have to be a discussion between the two because they both prefer to play the left, don't they?
Well, we'll come to your manager at the end. The manager could decide. We'll leave the manager to decide that. I'd probably have Butch on the left personally, but there you go.
And I think he'd be quite happy to kind of step aside, aside and play on the right.
So let's go to your midfield. You say you're playing 4-4-2, Phil. So again, let's go again. Do you want to start with your wide men and then your centre midfielders and just carry on?
Well, I've started Arnold Muren at left midfield. I think I'm left-footed, and so kind of when he came in and was floating these balls and in his crosses and free kicks and sort of the goals he scored and all those kind of things, just that you do as a young player. However good you are, it doesn't matter whether you're an aspiring professional or just your park player. You do aspire to the players that have attributes like yourself. If you're a big centre-half, you look to Terry Butcher. If you're a kind of more creative or goal-scoring player, perhaps you look at players further up the pitch. And Muren with that left foot, like a velvet glove, as I believe John Motson says on one of the on a Match of the Day commentary. He was definitely a player that I kind of aspired to be like. Never got near it, obviously. I thought
you were going to carry on to say, and you did sort of reach his heights. So I thought that's where you're going to carry on for a second.
No, sadly not. The nearest I got to him was him dropping his kids off at Kesgrave Primary School, where I went. I met him a few times over the years as well, which is a terrific bloke again, like sort of the others I've spoken about. And it's just obviously, a complete, a kind of cultural change for football, really, that summer of 78 when he came in here and the two Argentines went in at Tottenham and one or two others as well, weren't there? There was one at Sheffield United as well. The first time we'd really seen foreign players in English football. And of course, his recruitment was a cultural change for the way that Ipswich Town played under Bobby Robson. He didn't want to see the ball flying back over his head constantly. And so his signing really was the kind of catalyst for the development of that great Bobby Robson team. I think the 78 team was a very good team as well, but I think we all kind of look back on the 80-81 team as the greatest team that he created. And I think he obviously said that as well. So him on the left. Then across the middle, I've got John Walk, because you can't not have John Walk in an Ipswich Town team, can you? You could play him in most positions. I mean, that's the other thing. Having John Walk there, you can have a formation. I say this is a 4-4-2 formation, but you could drop him as an additional centre-half, couldn't you? So that would change. And maybe put him in as behind the front two as well. I'm sure he'd play that role if you offered him. And I think he played wide right a couple of times in his later period, didn't he? That game against Leeds, I think he played in a wide right role.
Ended up centre-half.
And started and finished as a centre half, didn't he? Yeah. But his golden period, I think everyone would be playing that holding goal scoring midfielder role that no one else really has ever matched. He's just extraordinary, really, I think. And the way that other players talk about him and just sort of shake their heads, kind of
it was a most extraordinary time that John Walk created for us that year. He got, 36, 38? I can't remember.
Yeah, 14 a year.
I mean, that 81. I mean, to literally every, if you look at the highlight reels of that season, and Walk just kept appearing on the six-yard spot, on the six-yard area, on the penalty spot, or what it does. He just kept flying it, and half the time, no one near him. It was extraordinary. He just had this beautiful timing, didn't he? It was wonderful.
Timing and three lungs, as Joe Royals phrase, that used to get up and down. And I think someone said that they trained with him, and his heading was as accurate as everybody else's shooting. You know what I mean? As anybody else's shooting. Just incredible, incredible talent. And then obviously the length of time that he played just shows his ability and his versatility as a player, that he had so much about him, that he's kind of a hero of the mid-70s all through to the mid-90s at Town. And having had spells away at Liverpool, where I think he top scored one year at Liverpool, which you don't do if you're...
what they win? Did he win the title at Liverpool?
Two or three times, I think. And just a phenomenon, really. Not just an Ipswich Town great, but an all-time great. I mean, yeah, if I think first goals, first Ipswich player to score in a World Cup finals, I think, in the game against New Zealand, I think, for Scotland. He scored twice, didn't he? And
Now you're coming out with the stats now, Phil. I mean, they've been impressive up to now with that. That's a good one. I didn't realise that. Scoring a World Cup, that's fantastic.
We didn't have many Ipswich Town players playing World Cups before 82, did we? I can't really remember.
No, you're probably correct, to be fair.
So, yes, and I think at any club that he... even you talked to Middlesbrough fans. We only had a season at Middlesbrough, and I had a friend of mine at university who was a Middlesbrough fan, and he said that he played a different role at home and a different role away, and, you know, just fitted it into it and played really well. And I think he kind of wanted him to stay, but I think at the time, different managers or whatever the situation, someone released him, and actually he was still living down here, wasn't he? And
he was, man.
Yeah, and of course we profited that 91-92 season. Again, he was a key man in that, wasn't he?
I think people forget actually that he came back and he was part of that title winning team in Division Two. You know, I think people sort of thought he just like came back, but he was a major part of that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So who are you putting alongside him then, Phil, in the middle?
Jason Dazell.
Oh, Jason Dazell, wonderful player. Yeah.
Partly because they'll phone me up if I don't.
And to be fair, that's the main reason. Right, we'll move on. No,
but no. I think the story again. You know, as an Ipswich fan, and him being an Ipswich fan, we've had him on Life's a Pitch a few times ahead of derby matches, and my main thinking is because he scored a few goals in derby matches and played quite a few. But he wants to talk about the ones that he watched from the terraces and the experience of watching Town win, seeing Weimark score a hat-trick in a derby and all those kind of things. So, yeah, he's very much one of us, you know. I think that's part of it. And at Ipswich, this tradition of having players come through from the youth system, although I'm not sure he played much in the youth system, because obviously at 16 he made his debut. Was it 16 and 57 days or something, wasn't it? Just a remarkable story to still be at school, make your debut, score a goal. Same day, it was his first game, wasn't it? It was Paul Mariner's last game that match. And leading or being a key man in your local team that gets promoted to the Premier League, I think is a brilliant...
I did a podcast.
So you're getting to that age now.
I get to say where I'm thinking things, but I actually do know I did them. I haven't got the confidence to say it. No, I mean, I did a podcast with Jason for the 90-92 season. And you're right. You're absolutely right, Phil. He got huge delight in talking about his time on the terraces. Oh, he loved being a Town fan. Oh, it made I made my Saturdays. He said I was about 13, 14. I was allowed to go on my own. And, you know, and he talks about it. He talks as a fan. So wonderfully, and what a thrill it must have been for him to see Andre score, you know, in a Town shirt. I know that obviously they're not here, you know, Andre's not hearing him, but I mean, do you imagine, you know, imagine what he must have thought that day at Sheffield?
I know.
Wonderful
for him. There, wasn't he? He was there that day. Fantastic, and so good that he was there to witness it. And also he was quite glad that Andre was 16 years and 200 and something days rather than. Slightly younger than him.
And of course, we haven't actually mentioned what a great player Jason was. We're talking about him, the person, but of course, he was a silky smooth player, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He's like a Rolls Royce in that middle of that midfield. And another one who's so versatile as well that he could play sort of the deeper role, but he used to play a role sort of off Chris Kouamouo, didn't he, in that 1992 team at times. Sort of quite a sort of modern sort of role, really, when you think about it, that we only really had one striker, didn't we? And someone, terrific footballer. Ipswich, sort of heartbeat of that team. I think you need in teams people from certainly Ipswich Town teams anyway, people who've grown up as Ipswich Town. We've got Wolfie at the moment grew up as a Town fan, and I think it's sort of living it, sort of representative of those of us on the terraces on the pitch, and again, someone else you couldn't really. And I know fans did have a bit of a pop at the time, and they shouldn't have done really. That you can only go so far as a player with Ipswich Town these days. I think probably the earlier eras, the sort of early 80s and 70s, you could reasonably expect to be an England international with Ipswich. But that era, once you get into the Premier League years, where bigger clubs are that bit bigger than the likes of us. Then to progress your career, I think you have to move on, sadly. And Jason went to Tottenham, and I don't think he kind of deserved the opprobrium he got at the time. And of course, he came back again for a brief spell, didn't he? He did very well in that brief spell, but I don't think he was quite what the club was looking for at the time. Player, terrific bloke. I've kind of known him for many years now, and as I say, that 91-92 season, which obviously we've already spoken about Walkie being part of that team, but I think that reinvigorated the club, because I think after the Robson years and the, you know, being relegated, and then the fallow years under Ferguson and John Duncan, a lot of people drifted away from the club, me included. A lot of fans, particularly my age, where was I? Sort of late teens during the Ferguson and Duncan era. You've got other things to, you're sort of getting interested in going to the pub and, you know, clubs and music.
It was an unpleasant time at the very difficult. Yeah. Attendances were down to like 8,000 and stuff. You know,
wasn't it? Port Vale, the first day of the 1991 season, it was 8,000 at Portman Road.
You mentioned just Jason Sells. We'll go back to your favourite level. Who's on your right hand side, though, Phil? That's a thing, because this is the final key man,
Kieran Dyer.
I
don't think you can. I don't know. He might argue that he probably should be better in the middle, but he's going to play on the right in this team, because I think Jason and Walkie are better. Yeah, again, fantastic story, isn't it? The local boy I think Jason said to me once that he couldn't believe that anyone had ever played for Town who grew up closer to the ground than him. Because I think one of them lived in Dilworth.
He was closer. Kieran was closer, I think.
Yeah, it's like one street difference, isn't it?
Yeah, but he was.
And I've seen for games, queuing for tickets for playoffs or whatever, Kieran sort of walk in with his boots, you know, he's not driven in. He lived so close, he just used to walk to the ground at the time. And I think probably the best player that the Ipswich Academy, since it's been produced, has been in existence. Actually, I don't know whether the Academy would have been. I think the Academy was 98 and Kieran had already made his debut then. But I think certainly the best player the Ipswich Town youth system has produced sort of since the 70s, since the early 80s, since Jason, I suppose, thinking about it. And what a terrific, a phenomenal athlete for starters, just sort of being able to get up and down, running all day. He told me a story once about when he was playing for Newcastle against Manchester City, and Kevin Horlock was marking him. And it got to about the 35th minute or something, and they're in the centre circle, and Kevin Horlock goes, "Will you stop running?"
And the thing with Kieran, as you know, we both know him very well, and you know, he's just Ipswich through and through. But not only is he Ipswich through and through, he's a very, very he was a brilliant footballer. I mean, again, sometimes these players like Jason and we sort of wax lyrical about who lived around the corner and they did this. Da, da, da. You got to remember, these were world stage players as well.
Yeah.
I mean, Kieran, another World Cup player, you know, played Newcastle Champions League football, and in a very short spell at Ipswich. But, you know, he's only, what, 2 years, 2.5 years, but he's in your favourite 11, and he's in quite a few.
Yeah, and I think, and with that kind of box-to-box running, the pace was incredible. Yeah. The pace running with the ball was incredible. Remarkable, really, sort of. And one thing I kind of think, and he probably still thinks about it now, that playoff semi-final against Bolton, the one that he played in, and that header which looped in, didn't it, to bring the scores level. Yeah. And what a fantastic head. What a fantastic. I mean,
He never headed a ball. That was the thing. He never headed a ball, did he?
Only he ever scored. I think that's right. And it just looked like it was, he'd scored that decisive goal that was going to take us into the to Wembley. And it just, and it's such a frustration that didn't happen in the way. And obviously we knew that if we weren't going to go up, that was going to be his last game. We weren't going to go to Wembley. That was going to be his last game. So, phenomenal. Yeah. Great player. And, again, probably should have made more appearances for England. I think 33, something like that. And injuries again impacting upon him.
Injuries completely like the beat, completely ruined a career that could have been easily 78 caps, no doubt whatsoever. He had a couple of broken legs and just hamstring, had terrible hamstring injury, which, I know he ended up going to America to try and sort it in the end, and when he got to America, they sort of said, what the hell's been going on here? This really shouldn't have been as bad as this. And so anyway, what a great midfield that is. I mean, what's that midfield again? We're going right to left or left to right, where you want to go.
Well, I'll go right to left if you like this time. Kieran Dyer, Jason Dizel, John Walk, and Arnold Muren.
I like that midfield. I like that.
It's a good midfield.
And a few errors, and I like that a lot. There's a lot of goals there, a lot of excitement as well. Right, Phil, excellent. I hope you like to listen to Phil Ham's favourite Ipswich Town 11, of course, from twtd.co.uk. Phil, the editor of that, is giving his favourite Town 11. I hope you enjoy it. We're coming to the business end of the football pitch now. It's gone 4-4-2, so we've got to come. No one has signed for Ipswich in the last half an hour because he's still here with me, and he said, like I said, he's going to storm out if they do. So fortunately, he's still here. So let's hope we can hang on for another 15 minutes or so until we get top two. Then who's up front then, Phil?
Paul Mariner.
Oh yeah,
I didn't see Ray Crawford play, and I think they're probably the two greatest number nines. I didn't see Tom Garnes either, but again, a bit before my time.
Apparently, now Tom Garnes, another player who people who saw play say, I never saw him play, obviously, say he was fantastic. A lot of people say Garnes was fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is, people who say, oh, yeah, hang on, League Division 3 South or whatever it was at the time, but there wasn't that kind of, the talent didn't gravitate towards the top in quite the way that it does now. My dad watched Grays Athletic in the 40s, and there were players there because of the maximum wage rule that they had at the time, who had better jobs. They were playing in non-league football because they could earn more money working as, I don't know, doctors or whatever, or dockers probably, than they could as footballers. He saw some really good players in that era, I think. It's impossible to kind of compare eras in that way. But Paul Mariner, I think, was the outstanding number nine for me in the era that I watched football. Those videos, the powerful headers. Do you know what I mean? The cross comes in, bang, is in the corner. And the flicks and the hold up play and the strength and the power and the shooting. What more do you want from a striker? The goal against, is it Norway for England, when he just sort of tricks his way past and shoots and scores? I can't remember too many better goals for England than that.
He literally. You've just summed it up, Phil. He literally had it all.
And I think, David Johnson, the older David Johnson, I don't remember. But he was clearly a very talented striker as well, playing for England and Liverpool. But Mariner took it up a level, didn't he? And his partnership with Trevor Wymark, who were probably, probably got mentions in some of your other 11s, I would guess, because for people a little bit older than me, because I think he was a little bit before that. Another absolutely terrific striker. And then Alan Brazil,
there's a
partnership with him, different players, different styles, and Gatesy behind them, who, again, remarkable player and kind of remarkable sort of tactical tweak that was made, which I think was Bobby Ferguson's idea rather than Bobby Robson's.
I think it was.
In the hole.
Behind, yeah.
I think he did it originally with Johnny Miller, I think, in the reserves. Bobby Ferguson a few years earlier, and then it suited Gatesy because Gatesy had never really established himself prior to that, had he, having been at the club for a few years. So, but Mariner, I think number nine, best centre forward that I've seen for Town. And
but who are you going to play alongside him in your 11?
I had a lot of debate about this with myself. Oh. Lengthy discussions.
Lengthy debate with yourself. Crikey.
Amdenar changed it a few times, you know, delete. I've gone with Chris Kiwomia from that 91 team. Because I think just the finishing, the quality of the finishing and his pace and how important he was to that team. Yeah. And another one that came through our youth system. Just a real star of that side, really. And as
underrated striker, I always think Chris Kiwomia.
Yeah, and I think and I do feel that 91, the importance of that 91-92 team is underrated really within the, partly because of Wembley 2000 and all that, because that gained greater headlines, I think, because we went to Wembley and won, and there was that dramatic day, whereas 91-92 was over the course of a season, and it was a slow build over the course of a season. Mm. And, you know, the big day where we actually won the title was at Oxford, not the biggest ground. So there was only a few thousand there of our fans at most. And so, yes, it was just such an important player in that team. Great goals and great goals in that spell in the Premier League for the next, because we did quite well the following year, didn't we? We finished down, but we were fourth at one stage before. I think that the other side's kind of worked us out a bit. And also I think you get that kind of when you've won a title one year and you go into that next season with confidence but I think there's a kind of an emotional fatigue that comes in, I think, after you've done the big job, you're getting promoted and you're still on that high through this beginning of that season. Then I think there is a drop off sometimes. But he was, yes, huge in big games, you know, Man United against Liverpool, all these people scoring big goals against big teams. And, so I think he kind of is worthy of that. And, again, you don't get a move to Arsenal if you haven't been a very good striker.
Talk about teams coming for, as you say, a striker. Arsenal don't go just signing willy-nilly strikers back then. You know, it was a great move for Chris. But, look, that's – so – Phil, if I'm not mistaken, we have your favourite 11 now, which you can now rattle off before. We'll have the subs in a minute. Don't get carried away with the subs. Let's go for this favourite 11 then. Go on then, Phil. Tell us what it is.
The full 11 from 1 to... Yeah, I'm supposed to give them shirt numbers as well, I suppose.
Give them shirt numbers. We want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We don't want silly 97s and 104s.
A bit of a worry that we're going to have two number sixes, though, aren't we? Because I'm not sure that BT and Butcher...
Which never one? Played number five.
Number six.
So you can tell Butch, he's number five.
Yeah, he doesn't like number five. He was talking about that on the radio the other day. Richard Wright in goal. Number two, Mauricio Tirico. Because Mick Mills can't be anything other than number three, can he really? Okay. Yeah, that's you associate Mick Mills with number three. Number six, Kevin Beattie. Also number six, Terry Butcher. John Walks had quite a lot of numbers over the years.
Yes, yeah. He was seven and eight, and yeah.
So would you say seven in the 80-81 team? Perhaps he's eight in this then. Walkie is eight. Kieran can have seven on the right wing. Jason can have 10, can't he? Because that was always his number. Muren was eight. Obviously, we've got two number eights as well now. Walkie can wear five because he wore five in his last period, didn't he? And then up front, Mariner 9 and Kiwomia 11 as it was. Back in the day.
Well, I think anyone listening to that now is completely confused what your favourite 11 was, but I think we'll have a graphic up and everything else.
There was definitely 11 of them.
Definitely 11 of them, absolutely. Now, a few subs then. Phil, rattle us off a few subs. We don't need to chat about them. Just rattle us off who you'd have as subs.
Well, my big debate about the other striker was between Chris Kiwomia and David Johnson. I think the younger David Johnson, because he was... And I know Marcus Stewart probably grabbed all the headlines.
Yeah.
From that era because of the Premier League year and the goals at Bolton or whatever. But David Johnson, for two or three seasons before that, was our 20-season man. And we wouldn't have been in that position without him. Absolutely terrific. And I do think it was quite sad, really, that he didn't get more of a go in the Premier League once we got there because he'd done the hard graft, hadn't he, for us. And at Russell Osman, I think, you know, very unlucky not to get in the team, but... Terry and Beat, I think it's difficult to kind of displace them. Russell, another fantastic central centre-half. And Kieran, funny enough, did the thing with me a year or so ago and saying that Russell Osman, every bit the modern centre-half. He thought that he played charity games with him and said that if he was playing now, that Pep Guardiola would be on the phone to his agent straight away. So Jim McJilton, I think from the 2000 team for a couple of years before that and the Premier League and of course, the Joe Royal era as well. Absolutely key man, hub, centre of that midfield. Absolutely superb character. You kind of look at it and think, well, yeah, I wish when I had been playing, I'd had someone like him there. Do you know what I mean? In that team who always wanted the ball. So if you're in a tricky situation, oh, thank God, Jim. You know, just absolutely fantastic. And of course, there's that hat trick in the playoff semi-finals, just superb. Sub goalkeeper, Bart. I think, from a more probably the most modern player in the team, I think. Yeah, just fantastic period. Just incredible consistency, really. And I think he's been player of the year at his club for 5 out of the last 6 years, which is just with Town and Millwall. So, really, really good. I think that if I was doing this in 2 years' time, Christian Walton, very decent shout of usurping him, because I think he's, as I say about Richard Wright, you can't think of any mistakes he made or very many mistakes that he made. Christian Walton in a year and a half, you can't think of many errors that he's made. And I think he's certainly one that could be in future best 11s. And that final substitute, Franz Tyson, I think very unlucky not to get in the team full stop, because he's such a, I mean, if it was purely on ability, and we're not talking just about ability.
We're talking favourite 11s, Phil, as I said.
It would be an 81 team, wouldn't it? If it was just ability. Franz Tyson is a fantastic player. Yeah. I actually played in a game with him once in Holland when he was 60-something. And still, he had an injury, but you could still see the class was there. Just the dribbling. I love the player saying stories that say, oh, yeah, if we got a bit tired, we'd give the ball to Franz to waste a bit of time to get the ball off him. Just superb.
So who'd be the manager, though, Phil? Who'd manage this lot?
Well, it's very difficult, isn't it? Because obviously I've lived through the Robson era and he's a legendary manager. But I've chosen not to go with Sir Bob. I've gone with George. I've gone with George because of that era. And of course, John Lyle was a fantastic manager as well. But just because of that era, and such a enjoyable era for me, really, that George was the man that masterminded it. And it was a journey of development over several seasons that fans went with and we all followed. And we got there in the end. You know, there was highs, there were lows, there were we saw young players with local connections. James Scowcroft, you've not mentioned, who's another one who perhaps another one of these young players who came through. Titus, another one. All those players that came in through that era that we related to as well. So I think it was a fantastic journey over several seasons. And I've heard players of that era say, who've been at various clubs, that George was the best manager that they worked with. Yeah. So clearly a very talented manager. And with that influence of Sir Bobby from having played under him during that great era.
Let's reel off your 11. Let's reel off your 5 subs. Let's reel off your manager. And then we'll have a quick couple of minutes about Kieran McKenna.
Yeah.
So come on then. What's your team then, Phil?
Richard Wright, Mick Mills, Mauricio Tirico, Kevin Beattie, Terry Butcher, John Walk, Kieran Dyer, Jason Dizel, Arnold Muren, Paul Mariner and Chris Kiwomia. And on the bench, we have David Johnson, Russell Osman, Jim McJilton, Bartosz Bielkowski and Franz Tyson. And the manager, George Burley.
Wow, I like all that. That's fantastic. That's nice. I like it. Yeah, well, you'll please yourself, Phil. I don't blame you. Give yourself an extra portion of lasagna in the press box on Saturday. Well, it's a fantastic effort. Look, Phil, it's been great talking to you. Thanks ever so much. And we can't leave before talking about the current Ipswich Town team. I mean, we're talking about this. Hopefully, this podcast will go out after the Barnsley game. So hopefully Town have kept their unbeaten run going. But look,
what a terrific victory over Barnsley. Absolutely fantastic, weren't they? Okay.
Well done, Phil. Brilliant stuff. We'll have to edit that early Saturday, Monday morning. Well, hopefully we won't have to edit. No, hopefully we won't. Look, Kieran McKenna, Ipswich Town now. I mean, you're like me. You've seen it all from back in the 70s. How are you feeling?
So we're looking very promising, isn't it, really? I think, I was just looking at some stats earlier for something I was writing, and we've not won our first three away games in a row since 1936-37. It's literally the club's first season as a professional club. And we went on to win the Southern League that year. So there's a nice omen. But yes, I think, yeah, we couldn't have started the season any better, really. I mean, we could have beaten Bolton, but that's kind of expecting too much. Being top of the league by a point, unbeaten. And I think what we were, the concerns going into the season were, would we score enough goals? And would we turn those games that were frustrations, particularly on the road, were frustrations last season, would we be able to turn them into victories? Well, I think we've scored 10 goals this season. Only two teams have scored more than us, Portsmouth and Peterborough, who are second and third. They've scored two more than us. But we've had most of our games away from home. And games like Forest Green, well, I think we only took 4 points from teams that were promoted last year. That would have been a game we perhaps wouldn't have won. We went through that dodgy period in the second half, didn't we? And you could see in other circumstances last season, that might have been a game where we slipped up. Burton, which was a very tough game, that could have gone either way. We'll say that about last season, that those games could have, ball dropped slightly differently. We could have won. We could have, but we won it. Do you know what I mean? We won it. And it's important that we're winning those games early on. And Saturday again, Shrewsbury last season, we dominated in a very similar way to how we did last year. But we managed to give them a 1-1 draw, whereas the game was never in any doubt Saturday. From the moment that, I can't remember Christian Walton making a serious save all afternoon. And once the second goal went in, you just thought, well, here we go, that's it. And I think we're starting to get to that stage now where you're less worried when we go a goal. You think we're going to, you're confident that we're going to win, even in those tougher games. But I think the only thing you would say is that aside from Bolton, we've not played anybody. No. In the upper echelons of the division yet. And so that will be when the next test comes. But we've struggled a lot with teams that were lower down the division this league. And I mean, MK Dons, I think they're not the side that they were last year, but I think they will probably come through ultimately. But teams that come and try and play football against us, I think we'll beat most of them fairly comfortably if they try and do that. And teams that are more pragmatic, which were our struggle last year, I think we're starting to show that we can come through those games, which is positive. And Kieran McKenna, what a nice bloke. What an easy guy to deal with from a media perspective. Excellent analysis of our performances. Genuinely a manager that I don't think fans have particularly liked a lot of managers in recent years.
No. He's got a very calm demeanour, hasn't he? He's got a very calm demeanour, Kieran. I mean, I think that's the one thing that has always struck me every time he marches over to just chat. It's a very laid back, and you imagine that you've got to try and think of how does that react then in the dressing room, where you can almost sort of imagine it, can't you? You can't imagine teacups being thrown around and boots.
No.
It's a very calm, talk about what they've got the players to do this, so let's get the job done.
And he is the new generation. Him and Liam Manning as well. I think they typify the new generation of managers. They're not, they're not really managers, I would say, in the traditional sense. Anyway, they're more head coaches with that structure. But I know his job is officially manager, but it's more they've got that structure around them. That management, you think, you go back to Bobby Robson. Bobby Robson ran everything at the club. He did everything. You hear stories about him choosing the carpet for the boardroom. And I think my dad told me a story about a friend of his at work one day turned up to go and buy some tickets for a match. and Bobby Robson happened to be in the ticket office and sold him the tickets. You know, yes. I can't imagine that happening these days. So he's very much that modern sort of studious academic manager. Loughborough University and not kind of the school of hard knocks and kind of coming up through as a sort of player and going straight into management and then learning it on the job in that sort of traditional way and being, I think we've recruited very, very well from a management perspective. And I think that it's difficult to sort of say after five games that you're confident and that kind of, but yeah, I'm hopeful for that. And really you should be with the squad that's been assembled and the money that's been spent and the quality of the management, whatever. There really should be no excuses this year. Ipswich Town shouldn't be in League One, and it certainly shouldn't be in its fourth year in League One. And I think if it is in this division for a fifth year, I think there'll be questions asked at the highest levels at the club about why we are. And because the Americans won't want that, will they? They're aimed onward and upwards. And as I say, at the moment things are very good. Delighted with the win against Barnsley on Saturday.
Phil, it's been absolutely great. It's been great chatting to you, Phil. I mean, it really has, and it's always nice because Ipswich Town back to front, inside out, and been a big fan. And thanks ever so much for your favourite Ipswich Town 11, Phil. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. It's a lovely Town 11. Nice to also talk about the future and the way things are now, and hopefully onwards and upwards. No doubt I'll see you in the press box sometime at Portland Road. If you can take that hat off sometime, I'd be very grateful. But don't worry, keep it on if you like. We don't mind it really. Phil, thanks ever so much for your time. I hope everyone's enjoyed not only just this podcast, but of course the boys on the Kings of Anglia. We do lots of podcasts with the Kings of Anglia podcast, and there'll be plenty of that and game day and all sorts of things throughout the season, starting, of course, just throughout the season. We do lots of podcasts. Glad you're enjoying them. Thanks to Manscaped, our sponsors. Phil, thanks again once more, and thanks for the chat.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
From true crime to football, Brexit to football, for more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.